evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Each week our conversations include you, and if you'd like to join us tonight, the phone lines are open. If you're on Oahu, call us at 941-3689 or on the Neighbor Islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. When the 2014 legislative session began, we got calls. Follow the bills that affect our daily lives, many of you said. Tonight on Town Square, we're going to look at one of the topics that came up several times, access to public recreational resources. Every county has places that cause residents and visitors consternation, and the list of reasons is long, ranging from no or limited access to competition among users, encroachment by developers, plus layers of redundancy and responsibilities split among different agencies. Senator Laura Thielen is proposing that we find out if there's a lesson in small victories. She's proposing a 2-year pilot project to create a working group in each county to focus on solving the conflict over one hotspot. Senator Thielen joins us tonight, and we want to hear what's on your list of problematic public recreational places. Our number again is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Good evening. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
This is one of those things that just gets people in the moment that they want to go do something and enjoy all the beauty that we are constantly talking about in Hawaii. And then something happens. They don't get to go on a favorite trail, or they still can't use some favorite place they have loved for a long time, or they get down there only to find that there are so many people, different users who want different things. Or a place may have disappeared. Or in the case of secret places, they're not so secret anymore. How do we start to begin to look at just taking one place per county, as you've suggested, and try to just have a little bit of success with one of those?
Well, Beth Ann, I think you nailed it with the complaints. I was telling you earlier that when I was chair of the Department of Land and Natural Resources, the number one complaint that I would receive were complaints around people using our public recreational areas. And in some cases, these were complaints saying they're damaging the resources, we need to protect the resources. In some cases, it was the other complaints that you described. Trying to take on and fixing that problem statewide is a little overwhelming. And this idea of taking a specific place and seeing what lessons we can learn out of it came out of my time at the department. Part of it is the solution is going to vary depending upon the place, because let's say you have a place like Kealakekua Bay on the Big Island. That's been a source of complaints for many years. You have a state park. You have county roads. You have a marine conservation district. You have maybe trails, and so you'll have different jurisdictions responsible for that area. But then you go over to someplace in Kauai, Haena, and you may have more county agencies there than you have state responsibilities. And so the solution in that area is going to require different players. And plus, you have different community strengths in those areas, different organizations and community groups that can step in or have been working over the years to help manage an area. So the idea is, let's let each county level, pick one hot spot that's been a perennial problem, gather the associated groups together, and to find out, is there a better way to manage the conflicts that are in this area? Because if we don't find ways to resolve these problems, it's just going to get worse as our population and visitor base grows.
And then we won't necessarily have the opportunity to fix it, because it may unfortunately fix itself in the negative by no longer being either there or able to come back from whatever damage we've done.
What we've seen up until now, when some places get out of control, either that the place is closed to the public, it's partially closed to certain members of the public, or in some real heartbreaking situations where somebody has been seriously injured or killed because of the conflicts. And, we need to stop that.
We've seen some of those damages that have happened and fatalities that have happened because of places. I mean, thinking back to that Mother's Day, with Sacred Falls and other places where we've had people try to hike and have a trail closed or something that has happened. And instead of trying to necessarily look at fixing the problem, the issue became, well, we can't take it on because of the liability, perhaps, or maybe it isn't really fixable. But why is it that we seem not to be able to fix these problems on a case-by-case basis as they've happened in the past? It just become too cumbersome?
I don't think that it's become too cumbersome. I think part of it is, just from my perspective when I was chair of Department of Land and Natural Resources, it's a little overwhelming how many problems that we have. And you have a finite amount of staff. And then even if you can get the buy-in from the staff at that one department to say, yes, we're going to focus on this area and we're going to try to resolve a problem, because some of the solution is going to be in the hands of maybe one or two different agencies at the county level, maybe the State Department of Transportation. Now, all of a sudden, in order to get to a solution, you need not just that one department at the table, but you need the commitment from these other entities as well to say, yes, we'll concentrate on that one area. So we never seem to get to the point where everybody has agreed to concentrate on one area because everyone's running on so many different fronts. And so, again, that's kind of the thought behind that bill is, can we get agreement to work together on one area and then take the lessons learned from that area to then start to manage, improve management strategies in other areas as well?
But especially to localize it with those people who have the expertise in that county.
Yes.
So that you don't have one master group that's trying to mastermind how we're going to fix all these different issues in different areas, but just one on one and see what that lesson will bring us.
Yeah, you can't. There's not going to be a one size fits all solution for all of our public recreational areas.
Well, we asked those of you listening to call in with your favorite areas that you think need to be fixed, need to give you some access. And we've got Andrew on the line from Waipahu. Aloha, Andrew. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you very much, Bethann.
You had a question, or
my question is, I'm actually part of a group here on Hawaii, on Honolulu, an Oahu-ish area, and we're avid disc golf players. Now, disc golf is a sport that's really big in the mainland, but there's only one course here in Oahu, and it's actually on private land. It's on Bella, and I'm curious as to why. You know, it's a pretty invasive course. It just would mean putting baskets up at different parks and, you know, building the course. But there doesn't seem to be any support or you know, growing of this capability in our state parks. And I'll take my question offline.
Okay. Well, we said that there are things that affect people's daily lives.
Is he still there? I want to know what disc golf is. Is it like frisbee golf?
Yeah, it's like frisbee golf. It's a sport. It's played. I got started playing in my hometown. It's played in your city parks. It basically is played with a set of frisbees. You know, we have a Facebook group that gets together and plays, you know, on a monthly basis. You know, I don't know exactly how many people are there. You know, but we have pickup tournaments. We get park permits. You know, we play, like I said, on a monthly and weekly basis, just pickups around parks. But we, you know, it would be great to have some facilities that are available for us so we don't have to take we have baskets that are temporary that we move around so that we can have our holes, if you will. But it's played like golf, but it's played with frisbees. How
many people are in your group?
There's probably about 100, 150 here on Oahu. We have chapters, I think, on the Big Island and Maui. And we have, like I said, we have monthly tournaments.
Okay, all right. We're going to stop you there, and we're going to get and see if we can talk about that a little bit with Senator Thielen. Thanks so much for calling in. Now, this is something we didn't expect to hear from.
Well, actually, it sounds like fun.
But
so I want to go
like
look into
fun.
It. Yeah.
But
I think he's absolutely right, is that we need, not only are we not managing our current recreational places very well, we need more of them. because, you know, there's people are more active today. There's more of us and we're more active, thank goodness. And as you said, there's a lot of other places that have been shut down, that have been kind of opened, you know, lands that people have taken advantage of, but now they're developed and they're not open anymore. We certainly need a lot more recreational infrastructure in Hawaii. I think this guy he's talking about something that would be a lot of fun and to have in the parks and areas, but we need support to go and build those things and to put them into place. And a lot of times when we're talking about recreational infrastructure, it kind of takes a back seat to roads and schools and things like that. And so part of it is getting the popular support, and part of it is finding the partnership. Because there are local groups like his that may be willing to help lend a hand in putting that kind of equipment up into place and helping, like, adopt it, like people adopt highways and keep them clean. And so, you know, yeah, I'm all for it. And a lot of it is just groups like his making that partnership connection with whatever government entity, you know, that they want to move into. But maybe what we need is kind of a state county recreational, you know, working group that would commit to that over time.
The irony is that we live in a place where we're constantly told how beautiful it is, mm-hmm. and to get out and enjoy it. And people come here from all over the world to do a lot of that, too. And mm-hmm. we don't want to, you know, shun them in any way. In fact, we're out actively wooing them from all over the place, especially China. And that means a lot more people coming here and potential conflicts with those who would want to use some of the resources, limited resources that we have now. Plus, tastes change. And whereas maybe years ago it might have been fine to have just a field or to have a volleyball court or something, tastes are changing. They're evolving, and what people are doing outside is different. I mean, the archery, I mean, forgive me for those who love archery. I mean, mm-hmm. it's nice, it's there, but maybe that space needs to be used for something else.
Well, we have so much space here and so much opportunity that we don't do. I'm a big backpacker. I love going on backcountry, you know, long-range camping trips, you know, 5-10 nights or something.
And you're not going to tell us your secret place, are you?
Well, you know, we don't really have places here where you can do backcountry camping. We don't have much of them.
Yeah, that's the point.
And we have, like, on the Big Island, that would be a beautiful place to have some backcountry camping and trails. On Maui, you know, we have some through the national park where you can hike down through Haleakala and the like. But, you know, really to do that long-range backcountry type of experience, it's not really available here. And so I would love to see more of that, more of the biking and jogging off the roads, because the road traffic is so dangerous here and it's so narrow and we keep having people getting injured on bicycles. And a lot of families feel like they can't take their kids out biking, and we need more off-road bike trails and jogging trails and hiking and things like that. Part of the problem is, you know, having the funding to put it in place, and part of the problem is the ongoing operational monies to maintain these areas. We have not put any significant increase into our trail program over the last 20 years as far as funding or staff goes. And when you think about the increase in population and the interest of people coming to go hiking here, I mean, it's kind of nuts.
Nuts, and in many cases, some would say just not feasible. Mm-hmm. If you're out trying to bring people here for this kind of experience and then they come with high expectations, and unfortunately we find that in some cases those expectations are underwhelming.
They're underwhelming, and this is where I think HTA really needs to step up as far as the visitor experience and helping both in managing the conflicts and then maintaining and increasing the recreational opportunities, because the visitor industry, it carries a heavy weight on these places. And we know that, you know, right now we're at above 8 million tourists a year.
And growing.
The United Nations Global Tourism Agency is predicting a 50% increase in global tourism by the year 2020. And I know that the HTA is working night and day, along with many in the visitor industry, to open up visas for China and Korea. And these are countries with a combined population of, you know, about 1.5 billion people. So, again, you know, it's part of HTA's, I think, responsibility to help address the impacts the industry has on our residents and on our recreational resources, and then to ensure that the people that are coming over here, as well as the residents, can have good recreational opportunities in a safe environment.
I mean, these are things that are natural resources. This mm-hmm. isn't Disneyland where something can be just plastered over and fixed and everything looks beautiful and continues on. Teaching someone to have that kind of way of approaching coming to Hawaii, mm-hmm. that's going to take a lot of money too, and especially as we're not just trying to market to them, but actively what you're saying is we should also be educating as to expectations that we have when people come over here.
Yeah, because remember when the Japanese first started coming to Hawaii in large numbers, there was a real period of time where the visitor industry had to learn how to educate Japanese visitors to work within, respect our resources and our environment, and then for us to be able to communicate well with them. And so if we're going to be opening up to new markets now, particularly China and Korea, what are we going to do to be educating the visitors coming to Hawaii on how to respect our resources and also our residential areas? Because with, you know, Yahoo, Yelp, and all the other online sources that people have for information, as you said before, there are no more secret places. And we have community after community that is just getting an influx of car traffic and people parking and accessing trails through their neighborhood and the like. And, you know, we just need to have some basic courtesy that's both by our residents as well as our visitors using that area.
The courtesy is seemingly in short supply in many areas, but you've nailed it on this one. We've got lots of callers on the line. We're going to start to take some calls now. If you want to join us, do it sooner rather than later, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or listening to the live stream someplace else. Going now to Roger calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Roger. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
You hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. I'm at the risk of sounding like a gadfly, I think, you know, we have such limited resources here and such limited space, and the thought of spending millions and millions of dollars to try to provide unique spaces for each...
Roger, if you're near your radio...
I turned it off. It just came on.
Thanks. We're getting some back. Thanks.
It will make a lot more sense to try to get people to the point where they said, hey, you know, we're just going to have to share these spaces. So that Frisbee group sounded wonderful and fun and everything else, but, you know, so does cricket and so does softball and so does everything else. But if people could just say, okay, you've got this field one day a week or one day every 2 weeks, it doesn't seem fair in a sense because you're restricting them. But on the other hand, how much can you really spend? How much can you really just dedicate solely to one activity?
That's sort of, I think, what we've been talking about with some partnerships. Mm-hmm. If there are groups that want to have a particular type of activity, obviously you can't just start manufacturing parks. We're in this finite little area. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to share.
I think he's absolutely right. And in many cases, people do share, which is great. In some cases, what you're going to need is the county or the state role for that area to help in managing safe sharing. Because, for instance, let's say in our ocean waters, Mauna Loa Bay, you will have rules and regulations that are dealing with how fast boats can go because you also have swimmers entering into the water. You've got, you know, divers that are in there. And so we want to make sure that when there is shared uses, that it's done in a safe manner. But I think he's absolutely right. On our land activities, we don't have as much land for each use to have their own dedicated park. And so it's a very reasonable approach.
Well, I mean, that's just not going to happen, and I don't think really anybody's expecting that to. But the mechanism, I think what Roger's trying to get to is the mechanism by which we share this activity, and not just for, you know, the kids who are playing lacrosse or soccer or anything else, but looking at how do we do this fairly and who brings in the equipment. You can't expect that suddenly it's going to be the government's responsibility to put up all the equipment that people need for whatever sport they want to play. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things that come into the park and go back out again, if the kids are playing soccer, if the kids are playing lacrosse, that's one thing. But for things like, you know, frisbee golf or anything else that someone may want to do, what kind of arrangement do you think is a fair arrangement?
Well, I think in some cases what I've seen happen is that groups that are willing to come forward and offer to assist and do it in a manner that says, you know, we don't have exclusive use of this area, but we can help clean up this park, we can help manage it, and then let's say we would use it for our baseball league on certain days, but then it's open to the public for other uses, you know, on other times. And so those are the kinds of partnerships that exist in a lot of places around our state.
All right, we're going to take some more callers. A lot of people want to talk to you. Going now to James calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, James. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I have just a couple of quick points. I'll try and keep it short. The main point that I was appreciative that you brought up was backcountry hiking and basically just access to a little bit more of like the open country up Malco. As we have our beach access is protected by some state laws, but there's not really any state laws saying that we have access up on the mountain, which is basically just as sacred, just as local, just as Hawaiian, just as important to most of us, or a lot of us anyways, and we just simply don't have the access because of ranches owning a large amount of the properties and entities like Bishop Estate and Kamehameha Schools, which own a majority of the lands and deny use to everyone except for a very select few. And sometimes they have valid reasons to protect their properties, but at the same time, there should probably just be a little bit more of management involved and a little bit more of maybe certain types of securities to keep people from causing large problems. And then maybe we could negotiate ways to have more access to our backcountry land and things like that. And not to keep going on constant run-on sentence, but also just wanted to mention that the Frisbee golf is another thing that kind of just opens up areas like that to people. It's not necessarily an area that would just be for frisbee golf, but it's like a trail that goes through the woods and you go from hole to hole, basically just a hiking trail. And it has these small metal posts in the ground that have a basket on them. They're very, very simple, would be cheap and easy to install, but basically all it is opening up a medium small-sized hiking trail that would allow people somewhere to get out of the sun and somewhere to go for a hike, where in most places in Hawaii we don't have any parks other than the beach parks.
Oh, well, and that's it. We tend to have this hierarchy that starts with the oceans and the beach. And some people would say, okay, we have to understand how crucial that is to our well-being. But the fact is it's all one big ecosystem, mm-hmm. and we shouldn't be discounting what's happening up in the mountains, and certainly that pleases you because you like to go up on those backcountry trails too.
Absolutely.
So what do we do?
Well, we actually do have access rights in the mountains because there are public access rights on historically used trails that cannot be shut off even by a private property owner. But the difference with the beach is the beach isn't private. So you don't have any of the beach area that can be shut off, really. But in the private lands up in the mountain areas, you know, as they've been developed, areas that maybe it's not a documented historic trail, then you're in a battle on a case-by-case basis. Can you continue to do this? And so the reality is a lot of those have been shut off because a lot of the historic trails were not documented, and so people have to kind of go back and do that to get their access points. And we have those problems going on now on Maui, on Kauai, on the Big Island, you know, everywhere. We do need to open up more access points on the mountain. I think part of the problem is some of the landowners who are willing are concerned about the liability issues. And so far, we have not been able to get a law passed through the legislature that would relieve a private landowner of the liability for somebody who's injured themselves on a trail that goes through their property.
And we've tried that several times.
Yes, yeah. And I don't think that we're going to see any wholesale opening, you know, of trails until we can get something like that through.
And that's only logical because you certainly wouldn't want somebody going through your property, injuring him or herself, and then turning around and saying, you, landowner, are liable for what happened to me, even though that person might have done it full well and knowing that there were problems, yeah. There were issues with how they were handling themselves.
Yeah, so I'd really like to see some law go through with a limited, you know, liability release for private landowners that opened up to the public for access trails.
Thanks very much for the call, James. Going on now to Carla, also calling us on the Big Island. Aloha, Carla. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I'd just like to make a really ridiculous analogy real quick. If you have 5 gallons of water and 100 people waiting in line that want to use that water to bathe with, flush toilets for 2 weeks, I mean, you know what really aggravates me is that it appears the government has no foresight, no motivation to actually solve the issues that are coming up. We have a tiny little space, millions of people who want to come and recreate, and now California is running out of water, so they're going to want to come over and recreate and possibly live here. And no one's looking at the big picture. I mean, we have a two-lane road on the Big Island, and houses being built all up into the mountains. And if there's an accident, we have to wait 4 hours for it to clear up because we have two little lanes. There's no foresight, no motivation by members of government that there's no. They're not looking at the big picture.
Yeah, Carla, it seems like you're looking at the whole issue of population encroachment.
Well, it's not just the population, but you're talking about recreation. That's part of the big picture, and everybody has these specialities that they're good at, that nobody's bringing together a group of people that are all part of the picture and saying, okay, what can we do? What would be a solution? It's just everybody just ignoring it.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there because there are county plans. I mean, there's island-wide plans, and there have been plans on pop-up plans. And
But I think what she's expressing is a frustration that in many of these areas, it's more than, you know, it's not just the county, it's also the state, it's multiple agencies within each one. So I'm going to go and plug this bill. It's Senate Bill 2391, and that's the bill that says let's pull groups together around a specific, you know, chronic problem, one per each county, and the groups that are responsible for managing, you know, the multiple aspects of that, some county agencies, some state agencies, and the community groups there, figure out over the course of a year, how are you going to manage that area? How are you going to address it? Is some of it, there's a huge pent-up demand for more recreation, then what's going to be the solution? And in year two, you start to implement that solution. But this is just a first step in saying, can we bring all those parties around the table to focus, you know, on an area, on the conflicts, and to come up with some resolution? So that's Senate Bill 2391, and you can contact the legislature. It is going to be up for a hearing, and you can submit testimony online on the Capitol website, which I think is I'm going to have to look it up. But you could Google Hawaii State Legislature, and you can go on the website, and you can submit testimony online, and it's Senate Bill 2391.
All right, and we'll get that for you up there, too, because isn't it capital.hawaii.gov?
Yeah, capital, okay. With an O.
Right. Okay. Just want to make sure I didn't invert that, because sometimes at this hour we do things like that. Okay. Going on now to other callers who would like to join the conversation, and if that includes you, call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Greg, calling us from Maui. Aloha, Greg.
Good afternoon. You know, I'm all in favor of a concerted, coordinated effort, especially at the government level. That sounds like it may not ever happen, but it's a good wish and a dream. But one of the things I see is that would encourage us, not only do we have a concerted, coordinated effort, but one that has a vision, and a vision that is frequently revisited. And, for example, asking the senator about the Ocean Recreation Management Plan that was really put in place about 20 years ago. And great idea, great concepts in the base effort. But if you look at today, especially on Maui, we've had an absolute proliferation of windsurfing, kite sailing, stand-up paddleboarding, and kayaking, these non-motorized watercraft, that these are sports that some of them were created here in Hawaii and some were born elsewhere, but have proliferated. And with them, what you have is new inundation of remote shoreline areas. You have now places where bathrooms are needed where they were never needed before, places where parking lots are needed where they were never needed before. They lack the infrastructure, and so you're quickly overrunning these wild places, these wild shorelines. And so I'd like to see that when we talk about a concerted, coordinated effort, and this is probably a classic one that you could take up at the county level here in Maui, that we also have a vision for this, a long-term vision. And it seems to me that if we focus, maybe even start with the Ocean Recreation Management Plan to deal with this issue, isn't it time we go back, revisit that plan, and revision it for what's happening today in the Hawaiian Islands?
I think you bring up a number of points, Greg. I mean, certainly going back to the issue that tastes change and sports are developed, they have different needs. More people here who are plugged into those sports and want to be able to recreate in areas that can contain them and offer them. And then you still have the same issue of a finite land and plans on plans on plans that go back for a while before some of these things that we've just been talking about. I mean, who would have thought about, you know, stand-up kayaking or windsurfing or any of the things that we see proliferate now 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was going to say, then you have the baseline things you were talking about, you know, these long-term camping trips. How about just the very nature of overnight camping? Mm-hmm. Just dealing with that, the crush of people that come to Hawaii, and I'm not talking about people who want to live out of their cars. I'm talking about people who actually, that's part of their vacation. They love to travel and camp from site to site. It's virtually impossible to do that on Maui. And in doing so, you're creating sort of these renegade campsites where there are no facilities. At some point, we got to pull our head out of the sand and say, hey, HTA, hey, you know, DLNR, et cetera, all the agencies responsible, people do want to do this. We can't ignore it's happening. We have to start creating facilities for them to do it.
Greg, thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Maybe all of this is pointing to the fact that perhaps we need a needs assessment, a real needs assessment for now. What do people really want right now?
I think, Bethann, you know, we do have a lot of those plans and assessments on the books. There is a requirement under the federal money that we get for state parks to have a certain assessment done at the state and county levels about the needs for recreational areas. This gentleman mentioned a plan and the like. What happens is one of the reasons why government has so many plans and so little implementation is that the money for the implementation does not follow the plan. And that kind of comes down to the legislature. And as I mentioned earlier, when we're looking at the legislature, you know, you have a limited amount of capital improvement monies that you can put out there and a limited amount of monies for agencies to operate. And when I was at DLNR, we took a look at the 20-year history of funding for state parks, for trails, for recreational small boat harbors, for the enforcement and the, you know, the beaches areas. And the money for state parks is actually less than it was 15 years ago. I mean, how is that possible? Our state parks budget is a mere fraction of the parks budgets for any one of the counties. How is that possible?
Meanwhile, you know, you have the inverse proportional thing happening with the population.
The trails, the money has not gone there. And I think if you were to talk to the counties, you know, the recreational areas, they would say that they're not funded either. When you look at the allocation of funds between all of the agencies at the state level, what goes towards kind of the recreational opportunities for our residents is just minuscule in comparison to schools and roads and health and human services. And maybe that's what the population wants. I don't know. But it really is going to come down to a legislation. You know, how are we going to appropriate monies? I think what people are hitting is a point now that our population is so big and our development has become so extensive that we no longer have the public places to go to recreate that we used to. And so maybe that's going to start to take a bigger priority, but I think that's going to take a lot of voices weighing in. People out there listening, I'm happy we're getting so many calls from Neighbor Islands. I can tell you as DLNR chair, Neighbor Island people get it. They get it. And so just talk to your legislators, your representatives and your senators, and just say, you know, when you're making your funding decisions, really look at funding our recreational areas, because we want to use them. We want to make sure that they're managed well, and we need to open them in a way that does have that vision that this gentleman's talking about.
Meanwhile, if you have the same pool of money and you're talking about how you carve that based on lists of priorities and where this sits, on a daily basis, this may be very important to some folks. Other people are saying, no, I mean, you're going to put more money into where we have to move into the future. But there are a lot of people who say, but that's got to be balanced with how we live our lives now. That seems to be a really difficult place or balance to strike. And we're always going through this same kind of conversation. And then overlaid on top of that, we're wooing people to come here. Mm-hmm. And we're continuing to do that. There are going to be more of them, and there are going to be more people moving to Hawaii and less people who have grown up here who may carry the same ethos that many people who have spent their entire lives and many generations of lives here. And so all of that will be changing, and that certainly is not going to be lost on the folks who are here and trying to have a little fun.
And don't forget the aging population, which is going to create some new needs. No, you're right about that. In our budget, we always are doing a balance. But somehow, I suspect that a lot of times at the Capitol, the people who are there are the people who, you know, maybe an agency that has a very large staff has more ability to advocate for its own programs and expansion of those programs than, say, an agency with a small staff. But when you take a look at the number of residents served, the number of residents impacted by the quality of those services, I think the recreational needs of the general population of our state are huge, but the staff and the agencies that are serving them are very small. And so what we need is more of the general population to weigh in to say, as we're making these decisions on how to allocate resources, are these recreational opportunities a growing demand that the residents of Hawaii want to see met? And do we also want to see HTA's role reevaluated? Because should they just be a marketing entity, which is, I think, the primary thing that they view themselves on, or should they start to step up and take some responsibility for the management of the impacts that the visitor industry has on Hawaii's resources and on our residences?
And that's going to be a whole other conversation that we want to invite you to participate in as we're moving through this hour, because there are a lot of people who are saying you can't separate those two things. You can't say people come and do nothing to give them the experience that you've promised them in all the marketing. That from, you know, simply being perhaps unfair, if you want to use that term, it's just not good business, mm-hmm. because they're going to turn around and tell everybody else. Now, do people do that? Maybe some do. Maybe some don't. Depends upon what experience they're coming here to share. But for those who would like to have more of the, you know, ecotourism experience, or who are here because they just want to be able to engage in whatever part of tourism they want to enjoy, not having it meet their expectations. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm still talking about the bathroom that I was in a park in Canada where we walked in and it was clean. There was toilet paper. Mm. There was soap. And, you know, and they just looked at, well, that's normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm still talking about that fact. Now, obviously, that's just one tiny example, but the flip side of that, when something isn't very good, that becomes magnified even more so.
No, and HTA is aware of that on the state bathrooms and things like that. But again, I think they need to play a stronger role in managing that. But also what I'm talking about is the tourism industry has changed dramatically too. It used to be if you wanted to start a tourism business, you needed to have a lot of capital. You needed to invest in a lot of infrastructure. Nowadays, you don't have to have that. You can set up a tourism business with
a computer
and a cell phone. And that's what's happening. People said, oh, our visitor industry, we're always going to be capped by the number of hotel beds. Well, have you gone online and taken a look at homeexchange.com, airbnb.com, vrbo.com? So, you know, forget it. We don't have a cap on the number of people who can come here, because nowadays anybody can open up a bedroom in their house to a visitor industry. And so how do you manage that? How do you manage the fact that I can start up an ecotourism business with a van and a cell phone, and I can advertise that online for practically no money at all, I can have the Yelp, you know, interviews, everything else. I can start picking up people, and I can take 3 hikes a day, you know, to the trail that's the access point is in the back of your residential neighborhood. And so HTA, I think, needs to be able to take a look at today's visitor industry and to recognize that it's not the same thing as being able to sit down with a finite number of large hotel operators and make a decision, and then that's that. The visitor industry is everywhere. I mean, it's in everybody's home. It's in, I mean, it, you know, it's a different business paradigm. And so what's HTA's role going to be now in helping to manage the impacts of such a diversified, decentralized industry?
And I think you mean more than just role, but responsibility.
Yes.
All right. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Going to Una, calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Una. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. Thank you, Senator Thielen, for coming on today. We all here in South Kona, we were all very concerned a year ago when Kealakekua Bay was just closed. We know that, you know, there were some rogue kayak operators and, you know, they were doing things illegally. But, gee, you know, you kind of expect your government to handle those things instead of closing the entire bay for 4 months during the peak of tourist season to everyone. I mean, that just didn't make any sense. It's we couldn't understand why they couldn't just do their jobs of monitoring and, you know, enforcement. I really liked your idea of HTA, you know, putting some money in here. You know, there's a lot more tourists, and it isn't just the same pool of money. There's a lot more tax revenue that's being collected. We have more tourists than we've ever had, ever, in the history of the state. And so that has to mean more money. That has to mean more tax dollars. And, you know, so what happened to me was yesterday, coincidentally, I didn't know you were having this talk at all, I called 6 different people. I kept calling 6 state agencies. Everyone kept referring me to another one because I was trying to get a permit for Kealakekua Bay, because when they opened it, they said that, you know, local residents with kayaks could just get a permit and then they could go in. You can't land at the Ka'avaloa Flat where the monument is, but you can paddle around in the bay. So yesterday, I called 6 different places. None of them had it. Everyone kept referring me to the wrong number. And finally, this morning, someone called me back and said, oh, you have to call the chairman of DLNR, because we made all these rules, but now they've been destroyed, and now there are new rules going to be made. So it's kind of insanity.
Well, I mean, and we've heard that story from a number of people about permits of all different types, but especially getting the runaround when it's made to seem so easy. You just call up and you just get a permit.
No, it's, you know, if we want people to put state revenues in and tax dollars into managing our resources and public spaces, we need to make them accessible to people. And there really is no excuse in an era of online permitting, you know, to not be able to do that. I know that Kealakekua Bay, there's a lot of history there of conflicts, but that's an example of an area where, you know, geez, can we pull people together to figure out how to resolve it? We tried while I was at DLNR, but it was just an internal DLNR issue. But you also had the county roads going down there, the state highway up above, and some other issues as well. So, you know, you're right. We need to be able to manage it. And if we can't get ahead of it now, when we have only 8.5 million tourists a year, where are we going to be in 5 to 10 years, you know, as those numbers are creeping up? We gotta find ways to manage it better.
And they're going to creep up by millions, not by just a couple hundred thousand.
Oh, yeah.
All right. 941-3689 is our number. If you're on Oahu, call that one. From the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Thanks, Una, for the call. Going now to Debbie from Manoa. Aloha, Debbie. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this conversation and bringing it to the public. I wanted to come back to the issue of limited liability. I'm part of a large group of folks that are working towards the passage of Senate Bill 1007, which I know you're all familiar with, and that's really to help extend liability protection to the state. It's my understanding that Section 520 of the Hawaii Revised Code does extend protection, limited liability protection, to both private landowners and to the federal government, but the state was excluded. So we're hoping, of course, that this bill can help fill that gap. It's the Act 82 provision that would extend signage around the public lands in order to help offset some of the hazardous recreational use. It's clearly not the best option, but it's currently the only viable one going through the state ledge. So I hope that it will make it, and hopefully everyone will help support that.
All right, Debbie, thanks very much for calling. But yeah, this goes back to the issue of liability. We want to have access, but the flip side of it is the liability for a landowner, for the state, for the counties.
What she's talking about is a bill. I think she must be one of the rock climbers. And so this is dealing with the quote-unquote voluntary trails. So they're not necessarily a state trail, but where people are going to do recreational activities. And yeah, she's right. I mean, we got to deal with the state liability there. I will say the rock climbers did a great job last year in coming down to the legislature to advocate, and I've never sat in a room with so many buff people because they were awesome, man.
We had a couple of them on the show from the morning show talking about that last year, and I remember thinking, wow.
But it didn't pass last year, and again, it's an uphill battle because they don't call themselves
no
the plaintiff's bar. They don't call themselves the plaintiff's bar anymore, but it's another more user-friendly name for the attorneys, I think, and they're, you know, they have a lot of concerns about limiting liability. Some of them, I think, are valid, but I think a lot of them have been addressed in that Act 82, and we really need to make it permanent so that we have limited liability where the state has warned people and people are, you know, assuming risks, you know, to recreate in these areas. And if people go off public improved lands and recreate on their own, well, jeepers. I mean, how many hundreds and hundreds of miles of unimproved areas do we have? We cannot police them all. We cannot be held liable for people going out and doing stuff there.
I mean, that's just a reflection of reality.
Yeah.
941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Debbie, thanks for the call. Going now to Carol calling us from Kailua. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. My pleasure. I've really enjoyed hearing some of the large problems that are involved in all of these issues. And I would like to bring just one issue that is kind of a microcosm for all of the bigger ones. And it's just a classic one. Access to the Kailua Beach State Park. And I moved to Kailua specifically because I love that beach for swimming, and I need that for exercise. So I'm a local resident, and I cannot park at the beach parking lot after work because there's too many cars. And there are other times of the day. I know that in peak tourist season, the parking lot's going to be full midday, so I don't even try. But thinking about possible solutions to something like that, I know that Kailua Beach is only, you know, one place where the same problem exists, overrun with tourists with rental cars and buses kind of swinging through.
But it's a real
maybe
issue.
Maybe we could have off-site shuttle or some kind of off-site shuttle system that would
Right. I'm going to just stop you right there because, Carol, sure. I think you've picked a really good one for a lot of people. I know, you know, friends whose grandparents would go there every day to go swimming, and they simply just stopped because it became too much of a hassle and it would outweigh the benefits of being able to go there. So they simply tried to find someplace else, and there wasn't any place like that.
There isn't any place else.
That's the point. That's the point of it. So that's a classic one. Mm-hmm. At least it would seem for Oahu.
Well, yeah. And so there was a big outcry in Kailua that we took a look at the rules for the park and the plans for it, and it did not allow commercial activity. So the buses have stopped going there. There are still some rogue operators, but, you know, it's a matter of enforcement. But also down in Lanikai, just the number of cars that come in there and, you know, park to go hiking the Pillbox Trail because Barack Obama hiked it. So now it's world known, you know, to go to that one.
Another
and,
not so secret,
know,
secret.
And then, the beaches, it's on the cover of Sunset Magazine. And it's so it just, yeah, the visitors and even residents going during off hours, it's just a huge demand. People are working with the city on the parking, and it takes a lot of community work because government is not going to want to come in and issue a decision when people are divided 50-50 in a community. So it takes a lot of work at the community level to come up with some management strategies. And again, kind of going back to that Senate Bill 2391, it would provide some support for working groups at the county level, you know, with the state agencies and community groups to kind of come together and let's start to check off, you know, area by area, one by one. Let's see how we manage them better.
And if those working groups happen, all of you who have called tonight, we expect that you're going to be on one in some form or at least give your support.
Well, but first submit testimony to the Senate, support Senate Bill 2391. Let's start get these working groups started.
You know, the point is, and we say this, you know, half teasingly, but the truth is when people call up and get very upset about something and when I will ask them, well, what are you going to do about it, well, then they get a little bit silent. So there is an implicit agreement that if this is something you want, you have to be able to do something to advance the cause and not leave it just for in someone else's lap. We've got some more callers on the line who want to talk to Senator Thielen. If that's you, 2-941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to John calling us from Eva Beach. Aloha, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to bring up a couple points. I think this is a great discussion. You know, I'm a resident. I've lived out here 9 years. I was prior military, but now, you know, I'm full-time resident and everything. A couple things I wanted to bring up. The first thing is I think that since I've been out here, one thing I've noticed that Hawaii kind of sets as its priorities is tourism over, I guess, kind of the residents here on the island. And I mean that maybe in the sense that I think that the state sometimes frames their mind in what can we do to generate tourism? What can we do to support tourism? And all the, you know, the residential stuff will come up kind of in its wake. I think that kind of causes an issue when it comes to funding projects, let's say like bike lanes and things that tourists can use. And I know, Senator, you were mentioning that, you know, some of the problem with getting some of these infrastructure upgrades for residents and for access to different areas and nicer bathrooms, all that stuff, it's just not in the budget for it. So I have the idea that has there been any talk about possibly getting dual purpose access for both tourists and residents, so something that would be like an island-wide bike path that doubles as both commute and also scenic rides for tourists who are visiting the island. Only would that, you know, relieve some of the traffic stress and everything, I think.
John, I want to stop you right there to give her a chance to be able to answer that part of it, because he brings up a really good point about these lanes that could be potentially a backdoor into actually getting bike lanes, because we've been trying that since the 90s, and that hasn't gone anywhere. Somehow, if that could be slipped in under tourism, would that make it any better?
You know, I would. It would be sad to say yes, because that means that we're not putting our residents' desires and needs, you know, first and foremost.
That seems to be his point.
But I think it always is a good strategy when you're promoting a project like that to talk about the multiple users who would benefit from it. And certainly, you know, pitching things that it's an access point for tourists as well is very helpful. We've had a couple of those, I guess, in Kailua, because the tour buses were shut down from going to Kailua Beach Park. The shops that are renting, like, surfing and snorkeling equipment are now renting bicycles. And so we're just seeing a lot of the tourists in Kailua come and rent bicycles and go to the beach park on bikes. And so, you know, yes, we know that there's a desire from the visitor industry to have that type of recreational opportunity, and certainly we should pitch it as meeting their needs as well as local residents.
There's also a movement for bike sharing and car sharing.
Yes.
And really looking at how do we cooperatively use what we need to use and not necessarily bring any more of them here to do what we need to
do. And another constituency that benefits from that, Beth Ann, which I think we often overlook, is younger people. We have a shortage of people, that 25 to 35-year-old category, because a lot of them will go off to the mainland because of the cost of living and everything
there.
We're looking at a bill now in the legislature about micro-apartments and housing, where cities like San Francisco that have a very high cost of living and high housing market are going to, in order to be able to house their younger people. Younger people, they don't necessarily want a car, and oftentimes cannot afford one. So having car sharing, bike sharing, all that is great.
All right, we're going to take one more call. We're going to go to Bob calling us from Honolulu. Oh, I'm sorry, Annette calling us from Honolulu.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to point out that the Hawaii Ecotourism Association has been concerned with this issue for a long time, and we've developed a certification program for tour operators. It's not going to handle the stuff that's happening with people going out on their own, but people will get a much better experience if they go with a certified tour operator on trails and in the ocean and stuff. I'm mainly concerned about the numbers. I think that's very scary that we've got going to have more than 8 million visitors.
We already have more than 8
Just
million visitors. In 2013, we had about 8.5 million visitors. As I mentioned earlier, the UN Global Tourism Agency says global tourism will increase by 50% by 2020. And so when an earlier caller was talking about HTA helping fund some of these improvements, my thrust is HTA needs to get into the business of also managing the tourism industry. I know they don't want to, because who wants to have to boss around your own industry? But we need somebody in the tourism industry to kind of, you know, to push unwilling people into those standards that she talked about, and, you know, to kind of set what is it that we want in this industry? Because, you know, we don't have the capacity limits that we had before the internet, now that anybody can set up that business, and we need to start talking about how are we going to manage it and how are we going to deal with the volume, or do we just let it be growth forever?
Well, we know that it can't be growth forever. I mean, by the simple fact that we are in this tiny place.
I visited Venice this summer, which is an island smaller than Oahu. 25 million visitors a year. So, you know, our business models are built on a growth model. Hawaii does have to deal with the fact that, are we going to allow tourism just, you know, do we want growth year after year after year? And, you know, if so, what are we going to do about it? Because we're going to price ourselves out of having people live here. And if we're not going to have growth that year after year, how do we manage that growth? And how do we manage the activities while they're here?
The big question that you're asking, I think that the really big one, to use that horrible overused word, is sustainability for all of us and a quality of life that we would want to have, and why those who have chosen to live in Hawaii are here. Bottom line for you is that this is a pilot project, and we're going to see how, if this passes, how in four areas this might inform a larger effort. But I think the bigger question you're asking is, Why isn't HTA really a part of this conversation and not just bringing them here in the first place?
Yeah, I think these are issues that we need to address again sooner rather than later, because growth will happen to us, and it's our choice about how do we want to deal with it as a state.
It's going to happen whether we like it or not. You're saying why we should have some choice in how it happens.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time to be able to talk. As usual, the hour evaporated, and here we are looking at 6 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us tonight for Town Square. Senator Laura Thielen, for popping in and sitting down with us. And for all of you who called, and I'm sorry for those of you we couldn't put through. It's just one of those topics everybody wants to talk about. Maybe we'll just have to do it again. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning for The Conversation. You have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.